Well, hello everyone. It's a bit weird to do such kind of conference. It would have been, of course, better to be all together. I'll try to do my best in this talk. So first, I would like to thank Xavier and Emilio for inviting me to this conference. It is always a pleasure to be able to share our research experiences, to get feedback, and hopefully to improve our knowledge and expertise. I'm going to talk today about an ongoing project, the Kuddenberg Heritage Building Information System. We have already done the phase one of the project. We are now in the process of doing the phase two, and I'm gonna explain you all of that. My presentation is divided into four sections. First of all, present our group. Then the main contribution is to talk about our experience in building this information system. I will start with the project description, a few words about our global approach, and then I will go through the four levels of our methodology. And then I will share with you some of the perspectives, and obviously I will conclude. The geomatics unit of the University of Liège is part of the Faculty of Sciences in the Department of Geography. We have several teaching activities. We are leading a master in geomatics, but we give also lectures in other groups, in other programs such as civil engineering, biology, or archaeology. We have our field of expertise in data acquisition, in one hand, from traditional land surveying, 3D acquisition techniques such as laser scanning and photogrammetry, global navigation system, remote sensing, and also in the other hand on GIS and cartography, more especially on GIS design, spatial data infrastructure, and data quality. So our research activities are quite broad and of course always rooted in geomatics. However, for almost 10 years now, we have been working on some built heritage applications, and most of the time in interdisciplinary consortia. I'm going to give you some examples of such interaction with archaeologists. The first two examples, I will discuss them a bit further in the perspective section, but just to let you know that we worked on theoretical aspects. In this case, the MIDM is the conceptual models for archaeological information. But we work also on helping archaeologists to record and to make some automatic classification building systems. In the case of the illustration here, it's a mosaic. It's in Germany des Prés in France, where we can use our concept of smart one cloud that I will explain further. So we have also some other expertise. GE4D is a bit our playground. Actually, it's a castle close to Liège. And we go there with our student, with our researcher to perform some 3D acquisition, test 3D modeling stuff. And the animation that you can see is virtual reality experience that we proposed at the moment at the castle, and it was the Halloween version. Another example is the Terra Mozzana Interact project. I am the PI of this project. It gathers people from university, cultural heritage sites, municipalities. The objective is to promote the common history of the cross-border area between Liège, Maastricht, and Aachen in Germany, through the digital exploitation of cultural heritage. And the animation you can see is the future virtual reality experience in the center of Liège. And the last example is a work done by my colleague Pierre Allot, working on the acquisition of small artifacts. It's done work done with people at the Université de Lille and a company. And here the main aspect is that the visualization is done through holograms. Okay, and then that you have a better view of what we are doing, I can now talk about the Codenberg Heritage System, Heritage Information System. So, I'm not an historian, so I'm just going to give you some information about the Codenberg. The Codenberg archaeological site so present the remains of the Palace of the Dukes of Brabant. The palace has been destroyed in 1731. Here it's known as being the palace of Charles V, the Holy Roman Emperor. The site is really in the middle of Brussels, very close to the current palace of the monarchy. And as you can see on the figures, on the image, this is an underground site, which makes, and we will discuss that later, which presents some difficulties when you have to perform 3D data acquisition. In 2017, the Codenberg Museum opened a call for tender, a European call for tender. One they wanted to have is to get an accurate 3D model of the site. They wanted to be able to manage some archaeological information in an archaeological information system, and they wanted to have a link between the 3D model and the system. So we answer, we get the contract, and here I present three of the main of our main challenges. As I just mentioned, the site is quite difficult. I mean, in terms of spaces and a lot of dark places and so on. So it was a challenge to get the data. Of course, they wanted to deal with a lot of different kind of data, which is itself, of course, a challenge. And the last one is the duration. They asked us to do all of that in five months, which was very difficult, knowing that we are a university lab, we are not a private company. But okay, we did it, and it was a really interesting experience. You can see here a view of the area. For the phase one, the target was the part called Aula Magna, which is in green. And to give you an idea of the scale, this green part is 60 meters on 20 meters width. Okay, so let's start with what I call our global approach. What we wanted to do here is to create an information system. We didn't want to do a one-shot solution. It was not always there what they wanted anyway, but it was very important for us to have an information system which have the following quality criteria. So it should have the functionality, reliability, usability, efficiency, maintainability, and portability. So we had all these criteria in mind when developing the system. Then we do not want to sell a software to these people. We wanted to help them to build an information system. And that's why we put it them, the user, at the center of the methodology. As I said in the introduction, we have a quite a big background in GIS design. We have an expertise of several decades. And what we've tried to do is to adopt the methodology here in the archaeological case. So the methodology is organized into four steps. It's quite logical. So the user requirement analysis, then the conceptual design, then the design and implementation, and finally, a usability evaluation. I have to say that working like that has also a great, a big impact on the people from the Gutenberg, so I will call them the users, because as I said, what we want to do is to create an information system with them, well, for them and with them. It means that it implies for them to acquire new knowledge, new, maybe different way of thinking, which can represent sometimes a bit of change of paradigm. Okay, when you build an information system, the core, to me, the core point is the conceptual data model. We didn't want to impose a model to the user. As I said, we wanted to build a model with them, a model that fulfilled their requirements. But if even if we wanted to give them a bit of freedom, we wanted to also keep a certain structure, a certain logic. And that's why I'm sharing here this idea of what I call your meta model. It's not very formalized, it's just for the sake of sharing it with you and to explain a bit our philosophy. And this, the aim of that was to come to the user with a starting point, and also with this, having this structure, we think then it's easier after, if we want to change, improve the conceptual data model, maybe go to other standard, maybe try to map some of the concept to, so for example, CDOC, things like that. It's clearly easier if we have an underlying structure and logic behind. So I'm just gonna go through a bit the meta model. So we start with an idea of a general concept of thing, specialize into four abstractions: spatial, temporal, function, and object abstraction. And the object abstraction is itself could be specialized into an event, document, state, and object. I'm not going to discuss here about the terms. As I said, it's not formalized. It's just to give you the idea. If we look to the, let's say, the first level, and we look to the relationship that we can build between these sub-concepts, you can find here in the red square that object abstraction is linked with the spatial, temporal, and function abstraction. Okay, this is not new. You can find here the well-known Burkitt's triad. And I am sure a lot of you use such kind of concepts already. So, of course, it's not new. Anything is new here. It's just, as I said, to share. Now, if we go and look to the next level, and if we look to the relationship that we might have between an object, state, and document, and event, we come to what is in the green square. Actually, what we call event, something which trigger change. A document could be also seen as a source. A state is when some characteristics last for a certain period of time. And the particular of a state is that it's linked to an object. You cannot be a state by yourself. It's always a state of an object. So that's why we have this relationship. And at this stage of the meta model, all these specialization of the object abstraction get the relationships to the spatial, the temporal, and the function abstraction. So as I said, that was for us a kind of starting point, and you will see later on how we can use this in the next step. So that's the end of the global approach. Now I'm moving to the first step of the methodology, which is the user requirements analysis. So you can see this diagram. I'm going to use this diagram four times for the four steps. When you can find different outputs, the specifications that feed the conceptual data model, then the system, which is composed of the information system, which is composed of the interfaces and the databases, and on the right side, all the data that then can populate the information system, and at the end, the usage, so what can be done with the system. And you have also legend, when things are in green, it means that it was a collaborative work with the users. When it's blue, it means that it's only our team who did the job. And when it's yellow, it's when only the users or the Codenberg people did the job. So the user requirement analysis step was very important. What we did is a bit clarify some of the specifications of the tender. You have to understand that in this Codenberg project, we are dealing with not one user, but different kind of users. We have site managers, we have archaeologists, we have people from the museum who have in mind tourism and exhibition. So, as I said, what we did is to clarify some of the specification. We organized a lot of meetings, and it was also a good opportunity to starting to know each other, to have a better understanding of their everyday work, of the vocabulary they use. And as I said, we do not want to sell them a tool. We want to build a system with them, which means that we really have to have a lot of interaction. So that's it for the user requirement analysis. And now I move to the second stage, which is the conceptual design level. At the conceptual design level, we still have a lot of collaborative work. I will start with the data. In this case, at the conceptual level, the work done on the data is just to select the best acquisition methodologies and parameters to be sure to fulfill the specification. So I'm not going to go into detail. You have also the interfaces of the system. So in that case, at that level, at that conceptual level, we have started to discuss about the interface and present to the user different mock-up. And actually the work is starting for blank sheet and asking them what they want to have display on the interface, what kind of menu they want to have, what kind of information, the type of windows, etc., etc. I'm not gonna go more into detail for the interface, and I will now focus on two remaining aspects: so the conceptual data model and the conceptual level, say, of the database information system. So let's start with the conceptual data model. So you can see here the conceptual data model of the Codenberg information system. So I'm not saying, and I want to be clear with that, this is clearly not the ultimate building heritage information model. Clearly not. This is a model, as I said, created with the user and some of the choices have been made to fit with some of the reality of the people of the Codenberg. So if we have a quick look to the model, you can, when starting from the left, you have an event classes with, you can see that you have time information. Then you have a link with what we have called states. And in the state, you can see that you have some pictograms which refer to geometry. We have also a link to a classes called documentation. And then on the right, you have a composition relationship with a class which is called element. This class element itself has a part of relationship, recursive relationship, and is also can specialize into other classes such as architectural element and container. So this is the starting point, of course, then to build the information system. And what I wanted to say here, and if I go back to what I call the meta model, you can easily see the correspondence between the conceptual data model and the meta model here. A simplified meta model where you have only temporal information linked to event and spatial information linked to state. And of course, you have a class event, and here the concept event, document and documentation, state and state. And what is on the left of the conceptual model is somehow an object or specialization of objects. Okay. If we look to the conceptual data model and consider what is related to geometry and what is not related to geometry, you can see that most of the class, which are here underlined in red, do not have a geometric component. Only state has a geometric component. And this color code, you will find it here when we look to the conceptual architecture, well, I mean the information system structure, at the data layer on the right, where you can retrieve this information. So in the red, you have the places where we will put all the classes that have no link with geometry, and we put it what we call a semantic database. Then we have the spatial database, and also we want to deal with two types of geometry, spatial database and point cloud data. That's the data layer. Then you have the application layer, when you have a geographical object management, and then you have on the left the client layer. When we're discussing with the people of the code and build, the users, we decided to propose two interfaces, one called semantic interface and the other one, the 3D interface, which is in this case a point cloud interface. So that's the end of what I wanted to say about the conceptual data model. Now we move to the design and implementation level. So we are going back to my little diagram, and in this case, it's really where we're the tough, well, not, I mean, the conceptual work was already the tough work, but this is here when we practically, we are going to create things. So I will talk about the blue aspect. So the blue, it means this is us who did the job. So the interface and the database on one hand, and then the 3D data acquisition on the other hand. For the semantic data, time data, unstructured data, it was the work of the users. So if we look to the information system architecture, I will go quickly through the diagram, but to give you some of the most important aspects. So you can retrieve a bit, of course, the same structure that in the one of the previous overheads. I mean, if you look down on the bottom, sorry, of the overheads, you can see that we have a SQL database with special function. We use the PostgreSQL and PostGIS solution. For the NoSQL database to store the document and semantic information, we use a MongoDB. All that will form the back end of the system, but we have also on the right an application layer for the point cloud when we store the file containing the point cloud. And you get the two interfaces. So you have the user interface, which actually should be called semantic interface, on the top left, and on the top right, you have the 3D point cloud interface. In that case, we decided to use a software called Geoverse to provide this interface. So this is a commercial solution. When for the user interface, we developed them ourselves. We had to perform a link between the 3D models and the databases, and the link between Geoverse and the semantic information, to say briefly, is done through an API. I'm not going into much detail here. Just to let you know, and you will see that in a little video, that we actually share some tags between the two components. We have tags. We get some information on point. About the point of view, you will see, But it's rather limited, I have to say, and I will discuss that in the evaluation, usability and evaluation step. In this diagram, you can have a view on the kind of functionalities of the different and where they are, their place in the different layers. And just to mention, so the semantic interface, the point cloud interface, you can see the type of function that can be done. Some can perform some queries, visualization, creation, modification of object, and so on. Okay, now we are still in this stage of design and implementation level, and I'm going to say a few words about the data acquisition. Some numbers, you can see the number of points we had, more than 24 billion, 2,000 photos, 110 scans. I think it quite interesting information is the mandate. So we needed 34 mandate to get the whole acquisition. This means the first land surveying work, because we have established control points, and then all the scans, and then all the photos. And actually, it was work done by two people, so it was 17 days of work. You have here an image of the point cloud. We took also, as I said, a lot of photographs, and the idea was to enhance the point cloud and to get nice, a better color and texture. And now we move to the usability evaluation step. It was done in collaboration with the users. What we did first is a lot of training session, because they needed to be trained, of course, to use both interfaces, the semantic interface and the point cloud interface. And so we had feedback from these sessions. And we have just started now the phase two. It took, I have to say, a lot of time between the different phases, because it's for some administrative reason. And now we had a few days ago new feedback from the users. So this is what I try to summarize here. Before really discussing the feedback, I would like to show you the interface. So this is a view on the semantic interface. You have different menus. Difficult in this case to go into more detail, but that gives you a broad overview. You can create you can create elements. You have here some generic information. You can add event state. You can see here a few of the menu, the material, the function. We have a parent item, and because it's linked with the part of relationship I've shown in the conceptual data model, and then you can access to different things and also geometry. And the 3D interface is the 3D interface of GeoVerse, of course, so this is a commercial software. And I have to say that you can do a lot of things in GeoVerse, and we actually decided to use this to be sure to fulfill the specification of the tender. It would have been just impossible to develop ourselves such a viewer in this period of time, and due to also to the budget, and we also believe it was not very clever to do this if something exists. Of course, the problem is that this is a commercial solution. Now I'm gonna show you some videos. Hopefully it's gonna work, I hope. And maybe if it's not working, if you cannot see it, just let me know. The first video is about the data acquisition and so data acquisition is showing you a bit also what you could do with the GeoVerse interface software. So you have here the point cloud, the images that have been taken. And this is the merge colorized on clouds. And now here are some things that you can do with GeoVers. So you can see some exploration, some selection that give you also an idea of the archaeological sites. I would like to say you can maybe see that the in terms of color, it's a bit orange. I will discuss that later. The user was pretty keen, you know, with this kind of output. It provides them a very good vision. You can see also from the left side of the screen that everything is georeferenced. And in this case, it's mapped with an OpenStreetMap OpenStreetMap data. This is the semantic interface. This is a web interface, and this is just the main menu when you enter the web interface. So that this is the end of the first video, and now I'm moving to the second one, where you can see the use of the semantic interface, and also how to make the link between some tag in the 3D model and the object in the system. So you access to some of the elements, you can look at them. Yeah, in the generic information, you have an infinite state, and here, you know, temporal information of line of time. When you can see the connection between, between some event and some element. And when you want to go to 3D, you have to go to a menu called Export to GeoVers. So you see there is a bit of manipulation there, and then it opens GeoVers and you have directly access to in this case, the wall, which was actually the element that was identified, selected in the system. Now we go into the other way round. You can make a selection within the 3D model, tag the selection, and send it back to the other interface. Okay, I think I have to run a little bit because I think I only have 10 minutes left. So about the usability, you can see here my little smileys. So to make it quick, when you look to the semantic interface, let's say everybody's happy. So I'm not going to say a lot of things about that. Of course, it could be improved, but we were happy. The point cloud interface, we as designers, as I said, okay, GeoVers is quite powerful, we can do a lot of things, but the connection between the two, the point cloud interface and the semantic interface, as I said, it's a bit tricky. It works, but it's not that user friendly. We did our best in the time we had. For the users, they have a bit the same feeling, but also I think they are also a bit lost with the 3D GeoVers interface, because it's very powerful. I mean, they can do a lot of things, but for them it's really new. I mean, the semantic interface, they cope with it, but the 3D interface, it's something, as I said, really new. They have to learn how to use it. For most of them, they are not used to work in 3D, which I completely understand. So they have some reserve with that. They would like to have some improvement, but it's not easy to reach. 3D data, it's okay, except maybe the color. As I mentioned, it was a bit too orange. Now in phase two, we have solved the problem changing the lighting. The other data, user has no problem with that, but I'm not that happy because, to be honest, at the moment, the user are not using the system in their everyday work. They're still in a process where they are, for them it's an ongoing process. They want to have more in a kind of they're waiting for the phase two to really using it. And to me that's an issue because I would like to be able, for example, in the meeting like the one we have today, to show you also some outputs made by the archaeologist or the site manager, and it's quite impossible because at the moment they have done a few, they have recorded things, but it's just simple things, it's not related to their everyday work. So I hopefully after the phase two they will really using it and they will populate it with their own data. And then the main issue is the IT. And I mean the IT service, the IT service of the Codenberg Museum was a bit a nightmare. So that means that we had to deal from the University of Liège a lot of things. So at one point we had the server here. Some of the users still have the data on their local server. They are not able to share it. So it's an issue. And my point here is say you can do the best system ever. Building it with the user, you can provide very good data, but if you don't have a good IT service, it's not going to work. And the good news is that they move to another stage, and they're now going to work with the regional IT service, which is much better. The phase two is started, and now we are working on another area. We have done the data acquisition already. We are processing the data, and we are talking now about the improvement of the system. So very quickly, what we could do is maybe to first of all improve the point cloud interface and move to another software. Geoverse is not longer maintained, and there is a new one which is called Euclideon, so that's a solution to move to Euclideon. Another thing is that the users, some of them not very happy to work with the full point cloud, and they would like to use a simplified version. And in that case, we could imagine to create a new interface that can support the 3D mesh model or things like that. So that's maybe things that we will do, but we are in the process of redefining with them their needs. And now in this perspective section, I would like to make the link with some of our research. So I don't think that what I'm going to say now is going to be implemented in the phase two, but it's something that we could think for the future. And as I said, to make the link with our research. I'm going to talk about a bit how we could enhance the data model and also how we could use the concept of smart point cloud and also maybe see how to consider a new way of visualizing and making interaction with the data. In terms of data model, I have mentioned at the beginning the MIDM, which stands for Multiple Interpretation Data Model. This is some work done by Muriel van Rijnbeek. She's finishing her PhD this year. Okay, I don't have time to go into the detail of the model. You can clearly see if you see some link with also the meta model I have presented before. But I will go directly with what is the main novelty, let's say, of the model is the interpretative sequence. And I'm just going to show you an example of that. Here is a succession of what we could call state or episode in the case of the MIDM about one historical object. And imagine that we can handle such kind of information within the model. And one expert, say author number one, interprets and propose an interpretative sequence and say that, well, first it was a house, and then we have an extension, and then you had the relics acquisition, and so on and so on. But another author could have another way to consider these historical objects and will create another interpretative sequence. And the main advantages of this model is to be able to deal with multiple interpretative sequences and at the end create a life map of an historical object. And what I can say here is that Muriel has worked a lot on recently on mapping the model onto a CIDOC CRM. So what I want to say with in combination with the Codenberg model is that we know that we would like to get the users to go to maybe a more complex data model, and that could be one solution, but of course we could also try to adopt other models. Now I'm going to talk about the SmartPwn Cloud. This is a work done by Florent Poux, which is working with us now. It was his PhD work, and I'm going to explain that briefly in a few slides. Usually when you consider point clouds, you consider that as a collection of points, obviously, but a bit as a raw data. I mean, people are used to work with the point cloud, to extract information from that, to draw and create some vector data, and so on and so on. In this case, the point cloud is more than just the raw data, it's really the data structure. This is gonna be the geometric primitives, if you want. So the when you look to this diagram, you start with points, and based on some knowledge-based system, Florent creates what we call a semantic patch. Semantic patch is a group of points. Then, in the yellow zone, based on some analytic algorithm, based on geometric relations or topological relations, you can take this semantic patch and connect them together and to aggregate them into bigger subsample of the point cloud. And then when you move to the last layer in pink, we can even classify these aggregated elements and classify and give them some depending on the context, to classify it to some semantic object. For example, you can, if you know that you are in office environment, after the aggregation of the point clouds, you can, for some aggregate elements, classify them as being a chair, or being a desk, or being a wall, or being a floor, or being a pen, or being a cup, or whatever you want. And the work of Florent now, of course, now is to automatic classification of to have this classification in an automatic way. The SmartPwn Cloud actually then, in this diagram, you can see here, you start with the PwN cloud, we have a parsing module, and then everything is stored in the database. So it's no longer PwN cloud files, it's really the database. And within the database, you might have, this is the right side of the diagram, some classification module based on deep learning techniques and so on. And you then can have some classifier points. Now I'm gonna hand, I'm sorry I'm a bit late, but this is close to the end. I'm going to now show you a short video that show you a smartphone cloud, but into a virtual reality environment, and you can have an interaction between the user and the pond cloud within the environment. So I think it's the best way to show you both things. So you see, we are here in a pond cloud. The points, the color of the points here represent the classification that has been made, automatically or semi-automatically, depends. Here you have in virtuality the opportunity to interact. Here what the user did is to change from classification to RGB color for the points. Now he's moving back to a room, and you see we're gonna classify, well, highlight, display the classification, but now it's possible to in interaction, direct interaction with the database, to remove some of the parts. And then example is going to remove the office table, then it's going to remove the ceiling, and you can see that you can interact in this virtual environment with the pop cloud. Okay, so that was some of the perspectives. So in summary, the perspective of the project, of the phase two, but also, as I said, more a general research perspective for us in our lab. And I will conclude now saying that the project, this ongoing project with the Codenberg, it was very challenging for a university lab. It's a real scale experience with also sometimes business constraint, really. In terms of time and contracts. It's a collaborative, we use a collaborative information system design approach, so it really requires interdisciplinarity, which is wonderful. It's difficult, but it's wonderful. Of course, such information system need to be open and maintainable. This is a key. And this is especially the key in a discipline like ours, where we have a fast-growing acquisition technique, fast-growing IT solutions. And also, I think this is also a huge change of paradigm for the heritage experts, which is also a big challenge, but sometimes a kind of limitation when you have to develop such kind of things. Here are some references to some of the work I've presented, mainly in the perspective. So the first one is application of a smartphone cloud in an archaeological application. Then this is the mapping of the MIDM to CDOC-CRM. Then you have the Florent articles about the pond cloud. I'm pretty very proud to say that we get the prize of the best paper of the over the last 4 years of the ISPRS, so we were very pleased with that. And two forthcoming papers, one with the video I've presented with the virtual reality environment, and the other one, well, actually, the presentation of today is going to be published in an article that should be submitted soon and hopefully available in the autumn. Thank you very much. I'm sorry I was a bit long, but it's not easy in such kind of visio stuff. So I'm going to stop the sharing, and I'm back live with you.